I mean, I know he's been involved.
All right, I'm going to get us back in the meeting. We'll return to our committee meetings. Regents will start making their way back. I made someone a promise this morning that we would be finishing.
How we doing?
We're doing great. Are we doing great? Doing great. So there's a lot of pressure on the chair this morning. We will commence back with the executive committee. Our first action item is the approval of naming designated rooms. And Mark, I think you're presenting on that.
Yes.
So you proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just an ad hoc announcement before we move to that motion. I want to take this opportunity to introduce to everyone Anthony McAdoo, Dr. Anthony McAdoo, who has started now as of this Monday as our new Executive Director of the Alumni Association. Dr. McAdoo was selected by a national search process that we conducted with the leadership of our Alumni Association and other members of the WKU community. He was, after that rigorous search, the unanimous selection of all members of the committee. He comes to us most recently as AVP and Senior Director of the Alumni Association for the University of Oregon, where he has worked since 2011 in a variety of progressively rising roles. Prior to that, he was at University of Arkansas in a variety of alumni relations capacities for 10 years, ultimately rising to the title of Senior Director for the Alumni Association there. Through a number of awards he's received and accomplishments for which he's been recognized, we were particularly taken with the fact that Anthony has special aptitudes in association membership growth, career networking, the development of business partnerships, collaboration with the fundraising arm of universities, integration of technology into alumni relations and community partnerships, and young alumni and chapter programs. All of these and more aptitudes that are going to serve WKU very well. So it's my pleasure to introduce Anthony.
Welcome, Anthony.
Thank you for the opportunity. I'm humbled to actually serve in this role. I've finished up day five, and the first 5 days that I've been here on the Hill, what I saw during the interview process has only been reaffirmed that there are graduates and community members, donors that have passion for this institution, and I hope that I am able to bring in the role with my past experience at other institutions is the ability to channel that passion into areas in alignment with the priority needs. Both the institution and the alumni body themselves. There are many opportunities, I think, that we can help in terms of advocating for this institution and within the state, obviously within the community, and then to also educate our alumni about how they can be supportive alumni of this institution and helping to be greater. So I look forward to working with our board members, our loyal members, and our alumni to make wonderful things happen here on the Hill. Happy to answer a question or two, if that's permissible.
Welcome.
Thank you, Anthony. Anthony, of course, has already begun the important process of becoming a Hilltopper, and he's very committed to that. There's a line from the movie Hunt for Red October where when they choose a course of action, the captain tells a story about the Columbus coming to the New World and burning his ships so that the crew would be well motivated to succeed in the New World. Anthony has already taken a picture with alumni president Julie Hinson holding up the red towel in front of the Oregon Duck statue. I think he may have burned his ships, so he'll be well motivated to succeed. Thank you for that opportunity, Mr. Chairman. With that, I'd like to present the namings that are depicted in your packet. These have been shared with President Ransdell, who recommends that the Board of Regents accept these namings of rooms and areas in honor of the individuals designated. Just a quick word about these, and then I'm happy to answer any questions before I invite you to consider a motion to approve those. Some interesting things about this list I just want to call your attention to. They're very emblematic of the broad base of support for WKU in our community. The gift for the Augustine Alumni Center comes from a family affiliated with the WKU Foundation. The gift for engineering and biological sciences from an important community organization. The gift to the Downing Student Union and the Greek Life Room in honor of AOPI was a group of AOPI sisters who came together led by alumni president Julie Hinson and her special efforts. The Dean's Conference Room in Grice Hall is the product of a well-thought-out legacy plan gift by the Oppitz family. And we have some other very accomplished graduates in the Guillaumes and Michelle Wells represented. And then of special final interest are the namings in the Honors College, several of which, if you note the larger than usual number of names being recognized, these are the product of innovative collaborative endowments where 10 or more individuals have each contributed $1,000. So it shows the power of individuals to affect philanthropy, even if they're unable to make individually gifts of great size. So this has been special work undertaken by the dean there and our gifts officer, and I think it's a good model for us to see. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions, but otherwise I'd ask for your approval of these namings.
I just have one question. What is the constructive collision zone?
The constructive collision zone, as I understand it, it is sort of an open meeting space to create opportunities for students, as in many new buildings today, to have an informal way to encounter one another and then have a discussion on the fly.
Thank you. I was just curious.
And hopefully it wasn't anything else.
It's a committee meeting.
I'm sorry, you're right. I think we're still finance. Sorry about that. Thank you, Dave. We're in the executive. I'm sorry.
I'll make the motion.
Motion by Regent Bell, second by Regent Dennison. Can you have a motion and a second? Any other discussion or questions? Call the vote to approve the naming of the rooms, areas as identified in the honor of the contributions of those individuals designated. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed no. Passes committee unanimously. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, that concludes our action items. We have two information items. First one is summer projects.
Good morning, and thank you very much. Pleased to be here this morning and talk about summer projects that Western is working on this summer. Each year, we get a very short window of about 90 days to complete some pretty large tasks. And each year, I'm always surprised at what we get accomplished in such a short period of time. What happens to us is that we really start at Christmas time or at that break period. It is all guns a-blazing, and we really move forward with planning because the day after commencement, we've got to have all contractors on site digging, doing the things that they do so that we can actually get completed before school starts. And it's always amazing that transformation at the last few days, how things are watered, new sods put down, and our students really are not interrupted or affected by the changes that are necessary to keep the infrastructure running at Western. I share this just as some fun facts of what we've got going today in capital projects. We actually have 25 projects, about $70 million worth. But of those 25, there's 13 of them at a value of $4 million that will be completed this summer. And then in small projects are renovation projects at individuals or departments. A lot of it's IT supported. But we have 83 projects that will be completed this summer when things are it's least intensive or least invasive to operations around campus. So that's I wanted to share that because it is a lot of coordination effort, and we always give full support of the university when we're doing that. And that's students, staff, and pretty amazing. Wanted to share our Helm Library project. Has been ongoing. We've done some things in the past, like replaced the windows, done some nice, creative, high technology areas, like on, I think it's the fourth floor as you go in, where, you know, the books have been removed. We've added just a tremendous amount of computers. And I always notice that when you walk through there, that it's full of students and very active. This building was built originally, and it was our gymnasium, 1931. Well, around 1963, E.A. Diddle Arena was constructed and dedicated. They converted this facility into more library space, put a mid-level floor in. But the units, the air conditioning units that support that structure, were put in 1963. They had literally rusted completely through and had fallen down onto the concrete. We kept them operational, but we had no choice but replace those. It's around about $500,000 project. There's one on each end, but you can see it's pretty substantial work that has to take place to get those type of large units in and out of an existing building. That actually has the whole building or that operation shut down during this summer. So we have no air at all inside the building. So it's a pretty warm place. And it's quite a bit of activity. Along with that, we're also doing some more exterior restoration of this building. You can see the terracotta panels located along the edge. We got a lot of, well, don't really see it here, but you see a lot of the, so we're cleaning, we're tuck pointing, we put a new roof on, we've done windows. We're really focusing a lot on our older facilities, the exterior envelopes, to keep them healthy. And what that really means is better comfort for individuals inside. Wanted to share, we always try to do some more high voltage projects on campus. One of our bright intern students that's working for us created this document for me on relatively short notice. But we talk about student engagement. Our students that come through the GIS program that support us on projects do an outstanding job. All those students that go through immediately get hired into the workforce. But our database and our tools really make these type of documents very easy to create, and they're very useful for presentations and helpful. All the buildings in green are buildings that have been completed and put onto our new high voltage underground system. You can see that on the this end, north end of campus, in this loop. Except for Grice Hall. That building still remains. We've got a couple of substations. You see the other buildings in this area on the south loop, what we call it. There's about 10 buildings total that's left. We've got about $16 million left. But I wanted to share with you, over since about 1998, in this each year, we've spent about $18 million of funds replacing 4160 power with the new high voltage 12,470 volts. Monumental task. We continue to ask the state for support. It's our number two project on capital, and I just want to share you that that's not gone away, but we're making great headway. You'll notice there's a couple of buildings on there that Brian will talk about later, because there's several residence halls. We do know about future plans, and that'll be handled accordingly when that time comes. This is a part of high voltage that's taking place. Just wanted to show you it is invasive. Does mean that we cut things open, put in new piping, go to new switch gear. That's actually going to support the Preston Center. Looking at sidewalks. Sidewalk repairs, oh, that's not much on campus, but we literally have about 26 miles of linear feet of sidewalks on our campus. And we have a lot of areas that we continue during the summer to make more accessible, fix places that were cobbled together, and it makes nice, smooth, accessible walkways for all constituents of West Kentucky University. And it's very helpful, and it really has cleaned up. And if you go to other universities, you can really appreciate how well Western each year takes a little bit of money, and we do another few little areas to make it easier for us to manage our campus. This is another area. This is Diddle Park, and we don't think about it. Diddle Park is actually 20 years old this year, and the material around Diddle Park over time had deteriorated such that it was unsafe. Probably one of the highest traveled corridors is right through Diddle Park, so it's important that that's kept to a very smooth and manageable area. Just some of the workers last couple of days replacing all of the dedication bricks that are in there that people have contributed to have this nice area on campus with an architectural feature that just enhances the beauty of our campus. Another one is on the lawn. This is Dr. Ansdale had been working with us and talking to Josh Trudowski. I'm going to give Josh Trudowski a lot of credit. He came up with an idea of taking an old ornamental structure or feature that came off of a project in 2010, which is Van Meter Hall, and has created. Now, this is a photo rendering. This is what is to be. But we're taking that architectural feature that was came off of this structure
on the roof
that they lowered down. We've had in storage. We've actually salvaged some of these pieces because that's true artwork that was on that building that was created so long ago. And we are actually pouring the foundations, and that'll be put on that beautiful lawn that we have in front of Van Meter. It's just one of the little projects that we get. We get into lots of different things. This is out front of Preston Center, and we've got one in the front of the building, we've got one on the side of the building, but again, we have about 3 miles of underground steam piping, and if we had taken some real detailed pictures, these pipes have actually rotted holes through them, and we have to do small sections at a time. We used infrared cameras, we had a flyover campus, and it actually shows the hot spots. I had brought up in earlier meetings to administrative council that we were losing about $100,000 a year in condensate water return because of the failure of the underground condensate piping. And it is critical that we have to maintain these pipes, get things going. A lot of times we'll see the steam come up in the winter, but a lot of times it finds crevices and goes in the ground. We don't see it. So we have to be very diligent in keeping these things repaired. They're in really complicated areas. A lot of times they're under sidewalks or in front of buildings. And I really wanted to just show you all the type of work that is done every summer, keeping the buildings ready for next winter, and making us become more efficient and being diligent about that work. This is one of our students. This is Byron, and Byron actually is the one who created the map. Anywhere on campus that we open up a ditch, we are actually taking photographs and taking GIS, very detailed locations to make sure those things are marked. Gordon Wilson Hall. We have worked on Gordon Wilson Hall over the last couple of summers. We are getting ready to put a roof coating on this building. We're also getting ready to replace the single pane windows in the building, and we've done some exterior work. Again, this is one that we spent considerable dollars on the interior of the building, fixing the air conditioning system, fixing the heating system, replacing the water line to the buildings. Now we're finishing up some of the exterior envelopes to keep that building healthy. Another project that's a short time frame, we've got a stormwater and a artificial turf project on the baseball stadium. Just showing you a overhead photo We actually had purchased a drone, and we're using that for inspection. We're using that to take job site photos. Gives us a different bird's eye view of some of the things we're doing on campus. That concludes our highlights, but I have a list of all the projects that we're working on, and if anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Brian, we'll get into our large capital projects, current and anticipated at the board retreat in July.
Question now on the maybe Dr. Renzel. The on the Confucius Institute, it's private and non-recurring reserve funds.
I'm sorry, what's the question?
I was looking at the fund, the source of funding for Confucius Institute.
Right.
The non-recurring reserve.
I'm sure that's the $800,000.
Is that what that is?
Yeah, I'm sure that is.
It is.
Okay.
Thank you, Brian. Always interesting to see what you do each summer. Next information item is a presentation on our Student Life Foundation 10-year housing plan. Brian?
One of the other three Brians.
We got an abundance of Brians going on these days.
Well, thank you all for letting me come and talk again. I was just here, as you may recall, in December talking about the housing master plan. In December, I talked more about the process that we went through, the surveys that we had done with the students, and shared those things. And we've been working very hard since December trying to move this process forward. Again, we started this process back probably last March. When students came back in the fall, we did a lot of surveying of students and focus groups of students to find out what it was that they were looking for in future housing. And I think it's important to talk about that this plan doesn't necessarily add new beds. We're replacing beds. Now, there will be some additional beds, but we're not looking to add 400 new beds to our campus capacity. It'll be more replacing beds and reconfiguring beds to better meet what our students are looking for. And again, this is a 10-year master plan, and I think what we're looking to do in the first 3 or 4 years is very realistic. Again, as you look 10 years out, I think it's a good plan, and I would like to see it move that direction, but there's a lot of opportunities and time things will change between now and that in the next 10 years of what may take place. Again, some of this is rehashing what we talked about in December, but just to make sure we're all on the same page. Again, what we're looking to do is change some of our housing. Currently, 72% of our capacity are community bath residence halls. What this plan will do is to create more hotel suite style. Right now, we have 21.8% of that type of housing. When this plan is completed, we'll have about a little bit less than 56% of our capacity will be that hotel and suite style with individual bathrooms or shared bathrooms. We will reduce the number of community baths from 72.5% down to 39%. Our apartment numbers, we're not looking in this next 10 years to build more apartments. Again, we're really focusing on our freshmen and sophomores and really focusing on what the housing can do to recruit and retain students. And again, there's a more of an opportunity there through housing students on campus for those freshmen and sophomores. And so, that's what this will be doing. You know, the realigning configuration, with the demand that our survey has shown. We are not going to lose beds, through this. You know, when the Student Life Foundation began, I think the university had about 16,500 students. You know, now we're, you know, hovering around that 20,000 mark. We were full when we had 16,000 students, and obviously we're full with 20,000 students. So, you know, the number of our freshmen and sophomores students have stayed pretty stable over that time. The again, part of this plan also talked about the what we're doing in housing to retain students and the programmatic, the educational functions that, that happen within the residence halls. And again, I think this plan gives us a lot of opportunities there with changing and reconfiguring. When we started this process 16 years ago, our initial 10-year master plan, we focused on, again, updating facilities. But in a lot of buildings where we had community baths, we put in individual bathrooms, we lost a third of our beds. So we did a lot of things that reduced the common space. Well, looking backwards, you know, looking back now, 16 years, that probably was a mistake. We reduced our common space so much in some buildings that we lost some of that sense of community. So some of this work we're doing will be putting some of that space back in. And again, we'll talk about that here in a few minutes. The good news is the financial stability of the Student Life Foundation, and I'll share some of that with you. We have the capacity to make some of these changes, and without significantly increasing rates and are affecting the stability of the foundation. Again, as I said, I think there's a great opportunity for housing to impact the retention. We've already have started making changes within the housing and residence life, adding additional funding for educational opportunities. This year in Pierceford Tower, where the majority of our first-year women live, students are being assigned by major and colleges. So students will live on floors where other students from that major college may live. Currently, if you look at the next 10 years, if the Student Life Foundation made no investment in additional debt, this is what our coverage ratio would be. Again, it shows a strong financial position that the foundation is currently in. Over the last 15 years, 16 years, the Student Life Foundation has created over $25 million in excess surplus funds that have been reinvested back into the facilities. You know, they're generating between $2 and $4 million a year in surpluses that again is reinvested. And so that's where, you know, the capacity will come from a lot is through some of these some of the surpluses. We do have over $6.5 million in a debt service reserve fund. So if we had a blip 1 year and the number of students were down, you know, we have the capacity to make our make our debt payments. You know, everything we do, quite frankly, is geared to make sure that we can pay our debt first. You know, we make monthly deposits into our debt service reserve fund for the interest and the principal. So, you know, if we saw an issue, we would know that early on. In March every year, we test our cash on hand. This year, we had 438 days cash on hand. So over a year of cash that you know, that would pay again any expenses that we may have. So I think that's important that I reiterate how financially sound this foundation is and how well it has worked for the university. At the same time, if you look at our rates and compare them to rates across the state and some of our benchmarks, we're on an average WKU rental rates are 15% lower than the Kentucky system and 24% lower than comparison institutions. Again, our community style, you know, the average is, you know, for us is about a little bit under 2100. So we're positioned well across the state and with some of our comparison institutions. One of the things you'll notice here, though, is that there's not a big difference between community style rates and the suites and pot and private bathroom style. And so one of the things that we are looking at is making some changes in how we set our rates. The Board of Student Life Foundation every year approve the rental rates for the next year, and those rates are set to ensure that we're able to pay our bondholders. Our community style, as we have set our rates in the past, we have worked very hard to make sure that we stay under a 3% increase, and that was something that we had talked with this board about back in 2000, whenever the Student Life Foundation was created and the property was transferred to the Student Life Foundation, and we've been able to do that, and unless we have did major renovations on a facility. So going forward, what we recommended to the board and the board has approved is that for community style, we'll stay at that 2% annual increase. That's what we're budgeting. The rates will still remain 4% more affordable than across the state. But that's if systems across the state does not make any major changes. We know that other institutions here in Kentucky are building new facilities, so their rates are going to have to go up. You know, they don't have a foundation like Western does. You know, in most cases, they're working with a private partner to provide funding. And in those cases, they have obviously shareholders that they have to pay and more expenses. So we feel like that we are going to continue to be very well situated rate-wise and very competitive across the state. In our private bath or shared bath buildings, we are trying to create a larger difference between the community style and those hotel style. Right now, it's about a 5% difference. We're moving more towards about a 15% difference between these semester rates. So for the next couple of years, we will increase those rates about 5%, and then it'll be 2% after that. And that's what we're using in our model. And again, we'll still remain 10%. More affordable than across the Kentucky system, given if they don't change anything. And then the same with our apartments. We are looking to increase those rates, again, to make that a larger difference. And then the new construction, again, will be very affordable, comparable to what you're seeing across the state. As we kind of move to implementation, what are we talking about doing? We're really looking at three areas on campus to make the largest impact, the largest effect. The what we'll call the freshman village, which is the south end of campus, where Barnes and Bemis are currently situated. What we are discussing is we would demolish those buildings and build replacement buildings in those in their place. Again, no real increase in number of beds. Currently, this is a community-style buildings. What we would build would be what we're terming a pod style, which is our buildings that are designed for first-year students, where they have a small group of students, a pod. There may be 4 to 6 to 8 students that live in a pod that would share bathroom facilities, a small common space, community space, and then they'd have their own bedrooms. Again, what we've seen across the country, this has worked very well for incoming students. So, and that because we would take down beds, that's why we're looking at building at what we're turning a swing building, replacement building, and I'll talk about it here. In a second. In the middle campus with Northeast and Southwest Hall, we'd like to create what we're calling the Global Learning Village. And you can see we're adding onto what are currently a one-story lobby. We would build a multi-story lobby in their place. And in there, we would create more common space. A larger kitchen, especially for our international students, having a place to cook is important for them. But for our honor students, you know, having a place to a quiet place of study, having a larger a multi-purpose space is one of the things that we've heard from them, because these buildings currently have very little common space. And so,
the intent of a global learning village be to house international students?
Yeah, in Southwest Hall, what our plan would be is that would be the honors building, and we would move our honor students that are currently in Bay Trenner Hall and in McLean Hall into one building. And that would give them then 300 beds that give them a little more beds than what they currently have, but it would put them together. So honors would be mostly in Minton Hall and then in Southwest Hall. And the Northeast Hall then would be both domestic students and international students. Because, you know, developmentally, I'd like to have our international students share a room with the domestic students. But in practicality, our international students really want to share a room with someone from their home country. You know, now some would like to live with the domestic students, but most, you know, want to live with someone that they understand and have and more similar culturally to. But I think, though, it's important that we find ways to create that interaction between our domestic students and international students. These buildings would be open, year-round. Again, you know, we would put larger kitchens in them for our international students. And, you know, these buildings, each bedroom has their own bathroom. And, again, that's one of the things that we know that our students really are looking for. And, again, these are just schematics. We have not finalized a design. But we want to make sure that these, the new lobbies, really translate well with what's going on across the street in the Honors International Building. Then in the what we're terming the Upper Division Village and the Valley as the terminology that a lot of people use, we're looking to create what we're terming a swing building. If we're going to tear a building down, we need to build a building first so that we don't lose that capacity. So we would build a kind of what you see there is an L-shaped building. We're still working on the design of that. But again, it's important to us that this building, again, relates to what's going on at the Kentucky building, how it looks, what's happening on top of the hill. You know, this would not be a modern-looking building. This would look like a building that's been sitting there for a long time. We have purposely situated the building to reduce the number of trees that we'd have to eliminate. If you walk, all these trees you see are actual trees that are on site today. So we believe that we'll be able to save the trees that are along College Heights Boulevard and majority trees that are behind. And again, it was important for us that we did not lose that quad space in that building, because the Valley, students really use that lower level. So, you know, in our design, we're talking about building some terraces so that students can sit outside on the terrace. Still would have a lot of open space for programmatic. You know, every year the Valley has what they call Valley Palooza, which is a big social event where they have inflatables and kind of a stress reduction program that happens before finals week. And this would still allow those kind of activities to take place. Also on the ground floor, we would include a food service option. You know, around Pierce Ford currently, you know, we have the Pierce Ford food court that has three or four different options, including a convenience store. This would be more of a smaller version of fresh food, or have an option for late night or 24-hour service for this, not only the students in the building, but students in the Valley and in that area. You know, if you look at the Valley, this new building, the Gatton Academy and McLean Hall, you're talking around 1,500 students. So there's a large number of students that live right in this area. And this would be the first building that we would build. And here's kind of the implementation plan. Northeast and Southwest, we would start sometime in November in reconfiguring those lobbies. The one thing that we will be able to do with this is put an elevator in the current lobbies that will allow students, the entire building then will be accessible. Currently, just the first floors are in these buildings because there is not an elevator. And if you live in the north wing and you want to visit somebody in the east wing, you have to go down to the lobby and go back up. This will allow students to go from one floor to the other without going to the lobby. And it will not reduce any of our beds, which is important for the financial model. The new swing space, we would plan again to break ground on that after homecoming, and so in early November. And then that would open then in fall of 18. Northeast and Southwest would open next fall of 17. Once that building is complete, then we would demo Barnes Campbell and build the pod style hall there, and then demo Bemis, and then build a replacement building for that. The consultants have recommended that we demo Poland Hall, but as we've talked internally, we think that, again, Poland is structurally sound, but it does need, we want to convert it. Currently it's what we call a two-pipe system where you either have heat or air conditioning. And we'd want to convert it to a four-pipe system so students could have their choice of heat or air conditioning any time of the year. But we would probably keep that building and then use it for private rooms. Because, again, one of the things that we've learned in this is that students want that privacy in their private room. Poland has two bathrooms on each floor. So, you know, it gives us, again, some flexibility there that we again, 6 years from now or 4 years from now, you know, we'd have an option to say we want to keep Poland or we don't. You know, but I think that's still kind of open because I think those private rooms would be something that our students really would appreciate. Again, in 2024, we would look at adding on to Bates Runner Hall. You know, Bates Runner Hall is currently L-shaped. Again, we would create another L-shaped building to create a center courtyard for about 200 beds, and that would be the suite style where, you know, two-bedroom share a bath. And then in the 10th year, we would take McCormick Hall, gut it, and then, again, create those semi-suites, two-bedroom sharing a bath. And the reason we picked McCormick Hall is McCormick Hall, the way it was designed back in the 60s, most of residence halls, there's a column at each bedroom. But the way McCormick was designed, there's a column every third bedroom. So it gives us a lot more open space, so a lot more opportunities to do some unique things there. Again, you know, the Student Life Foundation has renovated every residence hall on campus. So the buildings themselves are in good physical condition. But they're not. Some of these buildings, again, aren't configured the way they need to be configured. And the reason we chose Bemis and Barnes is, with being a cruciform building, they don't really lend themselves to being gutted and reconfigured. Like, you know, that's what we did at Northeast and Southwest. We gutted those buildings and then put in, you know, rebuilt the inside, but kept the shell, because in most cases the shells of our buildings are in terrific shape. But it's the way that they're configured. And to do that at Bates Bemis and Barnes would be too cost effective because of the, you know, the cross shaped of those buildings. You would lose too many beds to do that. Again, looking at what this would mean financially, this is the financial impact of the first three projects, because again, I know those first three projects are projects that we can see through and that we know that today that there's a need for this. And so, you know, if you look at what the cash flow would be, given some of the changes we've made in our rate structure, we're well above our coverage requirement is 1.25. So we're well above that coverage requirement with making these changes. At the same time, we're keeping our rates very affordable compared to other schools, and we're keeping buildings and rates at a low rate for those students that need a lower rate, that may not be willing to pay a higher rate, or their parents may not be willing to pay a higher rate for these new reconfigured buildings. And again, that's important to the Student Life Foundation Board. You know, when we talk rates, they're very concerned about affordability. And so this still allows for well-maintained facilities that are very affordable, that are, you know, in good physical shape. Again, kind of the bed types. I shared this earlier, but this would what the bed types would look like after the reconfiguring. Again, currently the blue is at 72%. The kind of orange is at 21%. So we're flip flopping the going from community style, having less of those and more of the suite and pod style with this plan. Questions? I know I've gone went through that kind of fast, but I realize I'm what's keeping us from being on time.
Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that of all the things that we've been able to do during my time as president, that the most innovative, maybe the most, at the time, some people thought risky, those of us that understood the financials to do better, but of all the things we've done that were innovative and have served our students the most, the Student Life Foundation, and its ability to keep our residence program at the in front of a curve that's in higher education that the students are demanding has been the most profound action we've taken. And this board took a bold action 16 years ago to establish the Student Life Foundation and turn our residence life program over to that private not-for-profit foundation. And the one simple variable that makes it work is the not-for-profit variable as compared to the for-profit variable that other campuses are now going to have individual private contractors come in, own their housing, make money off their housing, and then sometime 30 or 40 years after they paid all their bills, give it back to the university when it all needs to be renovated again, which makes no sense to me. Our Student Life Foundation, because there is not a for-profit variable, as Brian said, every penny goes back into those beds in our residence halls and allows our rates to be considerably lower than the other campuses in Kentucky for a better product. Now, the reality of time is that over 16 years, they've renovated every building, but now that the other campuses are having for-profit contractors build new residence halls on those campuses, in the perception of the incoming student, we're falling behind because they've got shiny new buildings, even though they're having to pay out the nose for them. And our buildings, it's time for the next iteration of the Student Life Foundation housing upgrade. And I cannot be more proud of the 8-member Student Life Foundation board and Brian's team to create this next dynamic to ensure that our students have the best possible housing at the lowest possible price. And it's a splendid plan that's financially sound. This will continue to be a huge difference maker. And again, not to add beds, but simply to ensure that we're meeting the market demand of what students are looking for in housing today. So this was a huge factor 16 years ago in taking our enrollment from here to here. And I'm confident that these moves will be critical in the next 10 years to take our enrollment from where it is now to where we think it can go in the next 10 years. So well done, Brian.
Because my wife has to serve on Brian's board now, and sometimes we run out of things to talk about. I hear about this, but I think one point that needs to be emphasized, too, is part of this master plan, they did an extensive survey of the students. Over 2,600 students were surveyed and went into things. And the thing that really struck me when she was telling me about this, reasons students decided to attend Western Kentucky University. Number one was 42% said, and they could name two things. 42% said quality academics. 36% said campus environment. Only 1% said quality housing. So anybody that doesn't think it's time to do this needs to look at that. And what this will do will create a lot of quality housing that students will find desirable, and it will do those things.
And
attention. And
I'm happy to share this with you, but I thought I'd save you from.
Identified us as having quality housing.
But what you're coming to hear is that we changed that number.
They're coming here.
We did it in last fall.
Yep.
Yeah.
So now only 1% are saying.
Well, they could choose two things.
Two.
Yeah. And
which I would be glad they chose academics and campus environment over housing.
Yes.
Think the forced choice may have created a misconception on that.
But
they had a number of things. They had proximity to home, scholarship, affordable size of campus, athletics, and so. But we're not attracting people to this campus based on our
housing has gone from being a recruitment facilitator to a recruitment deterrent. That's why it's time for the next iteration of housing improvements.
That really jumps out at you.
1%, right?
Because we do want it to be a reason people choose. I think academics will.
But you only allowed them to have two choices. You almost forced it to be a low number. That is I think from a research methodological approach, that is not a valid assumption that it isn't important.
Well, yeah.
Well, I only had eight choices, so if you gave them eight, they'd have been up there. But I think it does drive home the point that. Needs upgrading. And they're looking for the types of things that this plan will put in place.
But again, with forced choice and you could only choose two, that doesn't say a thing about housing. It says they value academics and campus environment most. And we don't know, relative housing, because they couldn't choose it as one of the three.
It probably means we don't have them in slums, but you'd like for that to be more attractive.
And we'd like for it to be more than 1%. But again, I think you're right. But I think it does, people do make decisions on coming to school and not coming to school, depending on their living situations. I'll use my own. I have a niece that lives in southern Indiana, and I've been recruiting her to come to Western since she was born. And every Christmas, you know what she gets, Western things. And she chose to go to IUPUI in Indianapolis, which is more expensive than Western, but she's living in one of their new facilities and paying highly for it. And, you know, obviously she could have had some choices here.
I refuse to accept the fact that we think that housing that we have on this campus does not make a big difference in a student's choice. I mean, every day of our life we hear the fact that our housing is one of the sellers for this campus environment. Now, I'm not suggesting whether or not, you know, everything is as it ought to be, but you hear students over and over and over talk about the environment, and that includes the house.
Oh, no,
so
I agree.
I'm just suggesting that it scares me a little to walk away with the idea that somehow we are deficient in housing, and that is
I think what we're deficient is in having a competitive advantage or being competitive. And competitive may not, maybe it's the advantage is probably maybe more what I'm trying to say, is that when students do visit other campuses, they're looking and seeing what their housing is like, and they're comparing. Now, we know that not all new students will live in that new housing. They all can't, you know, because they're building one or two new buildings. But we want to make sure that we have that advantage. We want to be a positive in recruitment. Housing should be a positive, not a neutral or a negative. And I think we're neutral right now. And back in 2000 and through 2008 or 9, we definitely were positive. I don't know that we're negative because, again, if you compare our housing to other housing across state, I think we have, in most cases, just as nice. But they're making changes, and we need to make sure that we're making changes, and we have the capacity to do that. And again, it's not forcing all students. We're still going to have very affordable housing at that significant lower rates than across the state. But for those students that want something different, we want to be able to offer that to them. And that's why we're not necessarily looking to build more beds. We don't feel like we need a greater, higher capacity to house more students, but we know students and parents would prefer for their sons and daughters to live on a college campus. So we want to make sure that we're meeting what their needs are, if that makes sense. But, yeah, I agree. I don't know that forcing people to choose too, that doesn't say, oh, my gosh, housing is terrible.
That's one data set in, what, a 50-page research project.
Yeah, there were any questions. I think there were.
Going through the competitive edge. And you're
Gary, I appreciate your comments because I think everyone on this board realizes that
campus environment.
Your leadership in this area 16 years ago was miraculous in leading us to where we are today.
Well, the university couldn't have done these things. Can you imagine if I'd have come to you right now and said I need $28 million to build a residence hall? Okay. I'd have been laughed out of the room. The Student Life Foundation makes that possible.
Jay Todd?
I just have a few questions.
Reader's Digest?
Yes. If you can return to the new residence hall construction. One question that I had is if enrollment continues to stagnate or even decline, what position will that put?
This one here?
Yes, that one will work. Or the physical one, where you see it being constructed. Yeah, that one.
This?
Yes, with construction of a new residence hall, if enrollment stagnates, continues to stagnate or decline, what financial position will that put Student Life Foundation in?
We won't really have any change because we were full at 16.5. You know, when we had 4,000 less students than we do today. And again, this is really focusing on those freshmen and sophomores. Right now, if you look at the 5,000 students we have on campus, half of those are first-year students, 25% are sophomores, and the other 25% are juniors and seniors. The reason that we only have 25% sophomores is because we have 25% juniors and seniors that want to be on campus. So we have a requirement for freshman and sophomore housing, but we can be lenient, and we are lenient with that sophomore number when, you know, those juniors and seniors are clamoring to be on campus. And we had, in the apartments, we had 1,300 people apply for 300 beds. But those students also can move, because they have choices. They can move off campus, and there's other apartments in town that they can live in. But that tells me, though, that students want to live in university, you know, managed property, controlled property. But I don't, enrollment would have to go down significantly, quite frankly, because, again, we're housing, 5,000 of our students or 5,200. If we were housing 50% of our student body or 75% of our student body, that'd be a little different. But we're really housing about, 35% of our student body.
And correct me if I'm wrong, this construction is not the funding is not coming solely from the Student Life Foundation. Right now, it's dependent on housing prices. Is that correct?
Well, we'll work with a financial institution to borrow the money from them. We don't have $28 million of cash. But the payment will come from student housing rates. All money generated within housing belongs to Student Life Foundation, whether it's rental rates, whether it's the cell antennas, whether it's the chill water plant. The Student Life Foundation actually owns a chill water plant, and then we provide chill water to the university. So they pay us for that. The retail spaces. The Student Life Foundation built the food court, and the university leases that space, for that.
And final question that I had, when the Herald article was published about the release of a new construction of a new residence hall, a lot of pushback that was commented or shared was that it's being created in a very popular tailgating area. I understand it's not historically popular for tailgating, but it is a historic area. What is the plan, if this is constructed in this location, which I'm sure it will be, what is the plan for tailgating or students who want to tailgate?
Yeah, and remember, tailgating is 5 times a year. Do you not build something because if something's happening 5 times a year? And I think we'd work with student organization activities to find another location for that. But and again, I think we definitely realize that the importance of this spot and as people come through campus, that's why again we're spending a lot of time on the exterior design of this building to make sure we get that right. We can't grow a tree that's going to be as big as some of these trees, and that's why we're making sure that we try to save as many of those trees as we can.
Thank you.
First of all, I agree. I certainly think one of the achievements of the university, as the president said, has been the Student Life Foundation. And I think the plan you've presented is absolutely, totally complete. It's very helpful. I have a concern, and one of my concerns is one that Mr. Ritchie mentioned. We are several years into women, which nationally is something that other institutions are seeing, is declining of those freshman enrollment. And while our housing costs are reasonable compared to other Kentucky institutions, housing is a part of that total package of affordability.
Mm-hmm.
And the second piece of that is, I think one of the blessings for us is that we've never had to require sophomores who didn't want to live on campus. I think if we did require sophomores.
Well, we do, though.
We do.
Yeah,
well, we do require it, but we don't end up having to put many people in a residence hall that don't want to go.
Well, from year to year, we're more lenient at times than others.
Yeah.
Last year's example, because the Gatton Academy was in Bay Trunner, we were very lenient. This year, though, yeah. We're not lenient.
They don't pay a premium. They pay $1,000 premium.
If they don't, I know
yeah.
that. And,
yeah.
And my point is that if we don't, if we find ourselves still in enrollment decline, ultimately the answer is that you have to require more sophomores to live there,
right.
Or you have to raise the rates. And I think requiring more sophomores to live there will be a disincentive to retention. And I think when you look across the country, and you've probably looked at this more than I have, but most of the institutions I know, it's the freshman requirement. It is not a sophomore requirement.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing is that we're moving on an assumption about the role of residential housing in the future at a time when nationally everything about what we assume about freshmen is changing. And so my issue is not at all, Brian, with the plan. I think it's a mm-hmm. really well thought out plan. It's about timing.
Mm-hmm.
I would feel much more comfortable if we found ourselves in a positive growth pattern on incoming freshmen. It would say, okay, at least we're not doing this at a time when we're headed possibly
mm-hmm.
further down.
Yeah.
And the second thing is that it calls to mind the whole issue of what our students are going to want down the road. We know that we're going to end up in delivery systems that are less residential-based. Now, will that mean housing accommodations that have a huge technology component that... I really liked your idea about the common space.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is an important one. So I think the plan's well thought out. I'm concerned about timing, and I wish we could postpone it long enough to get a sense that we're on the positive end of incoming freshman enrollments. The other thing, and I hesitate to quote anybody on what they said in the newspaper because that could get you in trouble, can't you? But you were talking about the fact that we have plenty of student housing available off campus, and the master plan is on residential housing. Seems to me that if we have too much housing, if we are in decline, we are surrounded with all this new stuff in our community, where they're going to have to reduce their rates too to be competitive, which pushes on Student Life Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just concerned about whether or not the funds of the Student Life Foundation are best invested in this, or whether or not we're going to find, with our declining freshman enrollment,
mm-hmm.
we may need some different configuration.
Yeah.
So what's the consequences
of
waiting a year or two or whatever it takes
to
know that we're in a positive
environment? Yeah, I think there's two parts to my answer. One is, I'd agree with you if all we did was provided bedrooms. And again, as I started the presentation, is we've got to do more and will do more with the retention efforts, because housing can be and will be and has been part of that, and we need to be a bigger player in that. And part of this plan is, and some of the financial plan, is to provide more resources for the retention efforts that take place within the residence halls. And to me, that's why we have university housing and what university housing can provide, that, you know, the apartment complexes aren't going to provide that, because they're not making any money on that. And, you know, and so that's why we need to do it as a university, and why we have university housing. To me, the risk not doing it is just what we talked about, is the more we delay this, this is, you know, it's not like we're going to open up something today. It's going to take us 18 months. We need to plan now for the future. And my concern would be if we don't move forward, we're delaying some of that opportunities. You know, it's the opportunity cost that we're losing. I guess one of the things that we have been fortunate in that as we talk to the board and as we've shared this with the board and they have looked at this, you know, they don't want to be risk adverse, but they want to make sure that they're good stewards of university of student funds, you know, the housing fees, and most importantly, they have a fiduciary responsibility. And so, you know, as they have approved this, you know, it's they want to ensure that they're reaching their fiduciary responsibility that they have. I mean, you know, we've been talking to the Student Life Foundation board about this, quite frankly, for a year and a half. You know, we finished the first 10 years and then we did the apartments. So we've been meeting with Student Life Foundation board planning this for a long time. And, you know, you all may have just heard about this 6 months ago, but the Student Life Foundation board has been talking about this for, you know, 2 or 3 years. So, you know, and again, as I said, decisions, it's what we do 4 or 5 years from now, I think, that we look at. Do we continue that? You know, the first 3 years, I think, are, you know, we have enough data. I would not sit here today and say, yes, we're going to add on to Bates Runner, or we're going to make the changes at McCormick Hall, and or that we may tear down or not tear down Poland Hall. I don't know. But I think with the data we have today and the due diligence that we've done, these first three buildings were an easy decision for the Student Life Foundation to say, yes, let's move forward with that.
One more question, Mr. Chair.
Anybody else got a question?
I'm
trying to get some quality here. So,
I think it's great. I'd like to know if we could get a copy of your slides because you had some really good data. Because one of the things I noticed was when you did the long-term slide, there wasn't a large increase in the number of rooms on campus.
Yeah,
it's a change in the quality, and I think that's very impressive that we're changing and that you're thinking about that and planning that. So, the one back.
Yeah, this one right here?
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. No, that one.
Oh, that's the...
The total beds. It doesn't go up a lot, but it's the change that environment, that community. And I thought that was really, really impressive.
Yes, not total beds.
It says total beds.
That's right there.
That's the coverage ratio.
Yeah. It has the 52-41.
Okay. Okay. Right there.
Total beds. Still not
first total. Yeah, I see the number, but it's...
Okay. Lines there.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
All right.
Brian, if you and Todd would... I know you will, because every year we send out a tailgating plan to all students, alumni, fans, season ticket holders, et cetera. So if you all will work on that, taking this into consideration. But remember, that work will begin right after homecoming. So I think we've got two home games after homecoming, so that could be a factor for those two. But look at the tailgating configuration, and I would suggest you go on and start shifting it to appropriate areas that students want. And it's been 3 years, I think it's three, maybe it's only two, that we shifted from all of our homecoming stuff from the South Lawn to the Valley. So there's no reason why I can't come back to the South Lawn.
I think when the Alumni Center opened is when we moved what was going on up there.
Regent Dennison had a question.
Well, I just want to make a comment. I would question you, too, if you were putting in more beds, because I think, you know, we have seen declining enrollment. But the pulse that I have, which is a lot of children going to college, I hear every one of them complain about the dorms that they have here as compared to what they get in housing at University of Louisville, University of Kentucky. Yeah. So I agree with you. I think it needs to be changed. The sooner the better, because I think it will get more enrollment that way.
So. Anybody else? Barbara, last question.
I really do agree with you about the impact on retention. Did I understand that all of your house renovations will include the kind of commons areas that can deal with programming?
Well, this plan is more with new renovation and construction, but we already budget about $1.5 million a year for upkeep. And as example, we have done work at Gilbert Hall. We renovated that lobby and did work with some community space there. We did that at Minton, so that's part of the ongoing.
But it'll be part of
it. Yes, yes, yes.
Anything else?
I have just forwarded you all a copy of Brian's presentation on your email.
And if you like, Phil, you borrowed your wife's a booklet here. If you might would like the full research of that, the full research that led to this course of action, Brian can get that to you, Student Housing Master Plan.
If any region has any other questions or whatnot, if you'll forward those to me or Julia, we'll get those out to the appropriate authority and get you answers back. I think this has been a good discussion. Has everybody got to weigh in? Okay, thumbs up from Jay Todd, so that's a cue to move to conclude the executive committee agenda. And our final section today is a report.